90 days since Reading FC saw out a campaign of caution, misery and revival. We're set to do it all again though this time round, but perhaps with a tinge of positivity going into the 2019-20 season after a pretty much expectedly quiet time boot on the transfer front, let's face it, and with Jose Gomez bringing together a hearty mix of youth and experience, be prepared for one of the most unpredictable campaigns we've seen at the Medeski Stadium. Welcome back to the Tilehurst End Podcast, episode 196, kicks the season off in earnest, and about a week early, in fact, due to varying commitments, which has forced us to get our eye in nice and early before the season starts and Reading kick off against Sheffield Wednesday. I'm your host, Mark Mayo, joining you for yet another, potentially, hopefully, very interesting season of all things Reading Football Club. And joining me tonight to talk through where we're at as we begin the season is Dave Handbags Harris. How's it going, mate?
Not too bad, not too bad. Season number 31 for me.
Oh, God, I think I'm season number 17, in fact, in that case, as a watching fan from the stands, as opposed to a kid who was supporting Man United and told to watch Reading because he could actually, you know, go and watch the players as opposed to just pretending they're real on a TV. But yes, so a bit of housekeeping before we kick on into the preview. Then we've got obviously the Tilehurst End Patreon campaign is always up and running, is continuing. We have been able to sort of pick and choose, as I say, with a bit of housekeeping going on in the podcast. We're giving it a bit of a lick of paint, so that's kind of contributing to that. So thank you to everyone who's helping out with that cause and just letting us know through the summer that we're doing something right and still helping you keep on top of all things Reading.
Hypothetical paint, I hope.
Yeah, well, it's a fresh lick of paint in the audio sense. It's pretty much how I describe it. So we've got
it might be a bit messy if you could sort of paint the mic, and it might kind of defeat the object.
Yeah, well, actually, I'm using a new microphone at the moment, so I'm glad I didn't actually cover it in paint or anything, which is probably the good idea because I'm no tech whiz. But generally speaking, it's not the sort of thing. But the man who is actually the artist of the sort of Tilehurst End clan and whatnot is Benjamin Greenwood, and he's sorted us out a nice new logo for the Tilehurst End podcast, as you've hopefully already seen.
Like rebranding, I like it.
It is. That's the sort of thing. It's just bringing through, just, you know, making sure that we're keeping on our toes and actually focusing on the aesthetic side of thing, because let's face it, otherwise we're going to completely fall down on the aesthetics. Luckily, people don't have to watch me while I record this, but that's keeping us on our toes. And then we've got some interludes we're kind of working on at the moment. We've rejigged the structure around a little bit, which we'll sort of get into more next week. And also, as a sadly, there's no weekend preview podcast this season, with Ollie being in his third year at uni now and having all sorts of commitments to take up his time. So more space on this podcast for previewing and whatnot is going to be pretty much the one-stop shop for all things Reading, if that sounds right, Dave.
Absolutely fine by me, and entirely unprofessional as well.
Well, we do try, I think. We try not to try is probably the best way of putting that. But let's kick on then. Let's talk about what Reading went up to this summer then. Friendlies, just to run down those people who've not noticed on what's been going on, as today was the final friendly. We've beaten Southend 2-0. We've beaten Gibraltar United 10-0. We've lost 2-1 to a very decent Sevilla side. 0-0 with Malaga B. 1-0 win over Extremadura, who is a sort of lower league Spanish team. 1-0 win over Lincoln, who are a sort of lower league English team. 1-0 defeat against Granada, so 2-1-0 defeats there. And then a 4-2 win over Peterborough and a 4-3 loss today as we record it against Chelsea. Dave, as a string of results, it's probably our most interesting pre-season, varied pre-season in years. And, you know, I suppose the results are pretty irrelevant, generally speaking, but not too much to get, you know, ahead of ourselves, but also some, you know, some okay wins in there.
Yeah, yeah. It's been very, very positive in terms of performances. Results, like I say, don't matter so much, really. And the one that I always like to point to is in July 2005 when we lost 2-1 at Farnborough. And we all know what happened in the year, the year after that. So, you know, you can't read too much into results, although admittedly this time last year, the feeling after that defeat to Crystal Palace, having not had a single win throughout the whole of pre-season, having played against the likes of Eastleigh and teams of that ilk and AFC Wimbledon, who struggled in League One. You know, the mood going into that season was one of absolute dread. So we're going into it this season having seen what we have, and certainly today as well. You know, more than happy to include that, because we played really, really well going into next week on an extremely positive footing. The one thing that does concern me is just exactly what Sheffield Wednesday do between now and then, having just read that they've been taken out of their soft transfer embargo. You'll have to remind me kindly, because I don't know if they've had any if they've had a change of a replacement manager for Steve Bruce. But they'll be very much an unknown quantity, really. We all knew what they would be about under Steve Bruce. But that's the only thing that really, really, really gets me. But if we play anything like we did in an attacking sense against Peterborough and like we did against Chelsea today, I think we'll surprise a lot of teams this season.
Yeah, it seems like the sort of attitude that I had as we started out with these friendlies is that we weren't going to be necessarily a sort of attacking team and a team with sort of great goal scoring ability, purely because of the sort of players that we had in attacking positions, generally very inexperienced, even if they are very talented. But the Peterborough game and the Chelsea game, I was struck, particularly against Chelsea, just how freely we moved the ball. And yeah, Chelsea were quite open, pre-season friendly, etc. But we approached that in a pretty professional manner, is how I describe it. And that, you know, to score three goals, and three good goals as well. And let's remember that Chelsea got completely gifted one of their goals. So, you know, on a normal day, we could well have taken a draw out of that. And you do get a sense that there is a sort of dynamism being built in this team for, you know, scoring seven and conceding six in a week at home. I suppose from a fan's point of view as well, it's going to be very entertaining.
We hope so. We haven't really had a great deal of entertainment. Even in 2016-17, it wasn't exactly what you call entertaining. So it would be nice to have a team that's actually pleasing to watch, and actually, you know, you're going to see a number of goals, and hopefully more often than not in our favour. The first goal in particular epitomised the way that we're setting out at the moment. I mean, we're playing a 4-4-2 diamond with Elise and Barrett as the wider players, and Elise was second half today, Barrett first half. But you know, that first goal today, which Barrett finished off beautifully. What you don't see from the highlights that I've briefly watched on YouTube is the build-up play, where we built up from right back, the lovely interchanging and triangles, just to completely take, you know, Chelsea's players and their midfield out of the game. It was a joy to watch. It was a wonderful goal. A little bit lucky with the rebound, but you know, to have that awareness of exactly where the keeper was, and just to beautifully lob Caballero from Barrett was excellent. You know, superb awareness. If you get the chance to watch the whole move again, then certainly do, because it's, you know, it's a goal that would grace, you know, many Premier League pitches and have commentators purring.
It would, and this is the thing, isn't it? Because I kind of want to talk about how the squad is looking now and where our strengths and weaknesses are. And as I said at the top of the show, I felt like our attack was going to be a bit of a weakness going into the season. And you look at the players like Elise, there was one particular move where he completely sent David Luiz for an ice cream, and the other defender, he completely takes out the game as well. Sadly, shoots straight at Caballero when he gets into the shooting position. But it was an incredible sort of play that you think, if we can replicate that just once or twice a game, then you put yourselves in such a good position to score. And I'll sort of drip in the mailbag as we go today. And Stephen said, on a scale of Elise to Elise, how Elise should we be about Elise? Which just shows that there is a lot of sort of hype being built around. And in terms of the squad's strength and weaknesses, this technicality, this creativity, we're getting towards a stage where we're actually, you know, hopefully in most games going to be able to be more creative than the team that we're playing, and be higher on a technical level.
Absolutely, absolutely. And it only bodes well for enjoyment purposes going forward. And you look at the majority of the players now, the creative players are young, they're from the academy. They'll certainly have a point to prove, but they're not looking out of place. And certainly, you know, today they haven't looked out of place at all.
Well, in terms of weaknesses then, where would you say there is sort of a problem in the squad? Because certainly after the Chelsea game, the goalkeeping situation got picked up on quite a lot. We've got Sam Walker, who wasn't fancied by Jose Gomez last season, into the extent that we went and signed Emiliano Martinez. Yao Virginia, who is the goalkeeper who I don't believe has played a senior competitive game yet in his career. That's going to be a case of being very unpredictable as to whether you can trust him or not. And I mean, we're never going to get a goalkeeper as good as Martinez back for this season. But do you think that's a case where we are just going to have to kind of grin and bear it and accept that that's where we are as a club, that these sort of players are going to play for us occasionally? Or
I think so, certainly at the moment. We are where we are. We've signed Jao Virginia presumably to be first choice, and presumably because he's got a lot of potential. All right, he hasn't played a first team game, but from what I've seen of him, he's looked okay, and there's a lot there to work with. So I'm reasonably content knowing that A, he's 19, B, knowing that we're going to have to be patient with him because he will make mistakes. I know a couple of people were asking what was he doing with the second goal today. It was deflected. I was right behind it, and it was so obviously deflected and wrong-footed him. I'm not sure he could do much more with it than what he did. The backup keepers, though, I mean, Sam Walker, he didn't exactly impress a great deal last season. All right, he was in a poor side. He hasn't done a great deal today to really change that opinion. I mean, the second one that he conceded, I think the less said about that, the better.
Yeah, that, let's be fair to him and not talk about it then.
Yeah, well, quite. I mean, I think it would be ultimately patronising if we did. Goalkeeping, it is where we are. Having said that, in front of him, in front of whoever the goalkeeper happens to be, I believe we have one of the best player-for-player back four lineups, certainly central defensive partnerships anyway, that the division has to offer now. I think we've gone about life in exactly the right way. We're not going to rebuild over a very short period of time. Rome wasn't built in a day is the old proverb, isn't it? But we're doing it in absolutely the right way. We're building from the back. We've now got, like I say, one of the best back lines that the division has to offer. And we've added a little bit of quality in midfield. Yes, all right, midfield still looks quite weak. And up front, I'd be happier with another striker. But Sam Baldock seems to have played himself back into contention with a little bit of luck. And while he would never be, first choice for me for a team that would be looking to punch in the top half of the table, he has good energy to offer, and he does nick goals here and there. He's not prolific, but him backing up Yaku Mate or playing alongside Mate, if anything happens to Barrow, I'd be fairly happy. The biggest thing for me up front is Mate and what he does, whether or not he progresses. If he does progress, then I think we could be on for a 15 to 20 goal haul for him. But it all depends on obviously fitness, form, how he develops, and hopefully he can push on the form that he showed at the back end of last season. And go on to be an even better player. He looks like we're starting to play through him more, with balls into his chest and into his feet. And he had he certainly had in the first half when he was on. He looked like he had the measure of Chelsea's defence, certainly physically. Reasonably promising, I think. But at the same time, yeah, goalkeeping is looks like it could be improved. But I don't think we will. central defence or defence is good. Midfield could do better, and up front, yeah, a little bit shaky, a little bit weak, shall we say.
Yeah, the up front situation for me, obviously a lot of fans are very big on Novakovic. Now he's back, and Danny Loader as well. I just personally stress that they've scored one championship goal between them in their careers, and you know, you might be able to say that's a bit unfair because Novakovic hasn't really played, but at the end of the day, there's kind of a reason for these sort of things. So I don't know if we'd sign a striker. I wrote a piece on the Tyler Sten recently saying Sam Baldock is justifiably kind of the one high-paid player that we aren't kind of desperately trying to sell. He went on the Spain tour. He's been playing consistently. And that is, for me, a perfectly fine reason for basically what you've just said, Dave. And just quickly on the goalkeeping situation, because it was a much disgusting in the tweet that we sent out just before the show, for some sort of mailbag opinions and whatnot. Daniel said, is Yao Virginia ready for this level? Christian Frank asking, what do you think will happen if he's not? I'd like to think Jose will be equally ruthless with Aloney as he's been with Deadwood and try and find a replacement. I'm not 100% sure that's how it will go with his own player, though. Zoran Novakovic saying, I wasn't at the Chelsea game, but against Peterborough, Virginia was less than convincing. A good goalkeeper is the bedrock of a solid defence, like Martinez, Alhabzi. A dodgy goalkeeper saps the confidence right out of it. Will Virginia cut it? And Mick Day saying, I'd love to see a keeper who could govern the space in front of his goal in the same way that Marcus Hanrahan did. He prevented so much danger with his aerial dominance. And personally, for me, the case of Jose Gomez perhaps going back into the market for a goalkeeper, I think that's a thing for January now. I don't think Reading are particularly in a position to go and get another goalkeeper.
Because we need to remember that we're in picking up on that text about what would Gomez do if João Virginia wasn't cutting it. There isn't much we could do, because we've got to remember that the transfer window closes before the season starts. So it's between now and January. And if he doesn't cut it, then, well, we either go for... we either make a change and play Sam Walker or one of the youngsters, or we stick with him. So I think what's going to happen is we will stick with him. And you've got to remember, he is 19, so he's got to have the fans have got to have patience with him. If he does start costing us goals that cost us results, then so be it. But it'd be interesting to see exactly what Gomez does if he does start doing that. I trust Gomez's judgment a lot based on what he's done so far in his managerial tenure, certainly at Reading anyway. I can't believe that he would. Leave a 19-year-old goalkeeper out to dry. He's the sort of manager that I believe would be putting an arm around the shoulder of him if he does make a few mistakes, and giving him the confidence to play. I've not seen anything really to be too concerned about with him. But at the same time, it is pre-season. It's not a cut and dried, dyed-in-the-wool first team competitive championship fixture.
No, and I think the thing is with the Virginia signing as well is that he was the first signing, and he was a signing that was made under this talked about soft embargo we were under. And the fact that he was allowed to join amidst that kind of tells me that we're not really paying any money for him. He's basically just there as a freebie who Everton are happy to... If he plays 10 games, he plays 15 games for us this season, then they're probably happy because he was going to play zero at Everton. So... he's there, and he'll be a theme for the season, and ultimately he's probably been signed for a bit of technical ability on the ball as well as his saving ability, because that's certainly where Sam Walker appears to be lagging behind. The other signings that we've made, just to round those off, we've signed Michael Morrison, the Birmingham captain, on a free, which generally speaking, if you're signing the captain of another team without paying for him, for me that's a good deal. Matt Miazga on loan for the season, centre back. I don't think we really need to say much more about him because we know all about him and we've raved about him plenty of times on his 6-month loan spell last season. And Charlie Adam on a free in midfield, which is... What's your take on this, Hambaz? It's an interesting signing when we go to obviously another championship club. He hasn't really played much last season. His career has kind of ebbed and flowed from some massive heights and some, you know, say last season he was pretty anonymous at a pretty anonymous team. So picking him up, 1 year deal, is it a case of, you know, just throw him in there? It's a position certainly for me that we needed to strengthen. And is he going to, you know, do we have to really rely on him that much, or is it kind of risk-free?
For me, it's relatively risk-free. I can't believe he'd be on huge wages. He's only on a one-year deal. So, you know, if he wants another deal, he needs to play well. He brings a technical ability. You know, we all know what his quality is with his, certainly with his left foot. So he's a Gomez type player. And he did today in the base of the diamond he was at today, he could just sit deep. And he, you know, today I thought he looked really good. Really, really composed, certainly in deeper areas. And he pinged the ball out wide on more than one occasion in a very, very composed manner, and, you know, just kind of kept things ticking over. I quite enjoyed watching him play today. So for me, it was a reasonable signing on a free. Certainly offers us backup at the very, very least. Why not? I quite enjoyed watching him play today, and I think he'll certainly have something to offer this season.
Well, we're basically just trading for Liam Kelly, haven't we? We basically just said for Kelly is a player who's left for Feyenoord for what we understand for a nominal or for no fee. And we've got Charlie Adam instead to do pretty much that job. And if that's what Gomez wants to do, and Charlie Adam is certainly a higher ilk of player than Liam Kelly, I won't complain about that. A few questions on this, on the topic of signings, as we have until Thursday, the 8th of August, I believe it is the transfer deadline. Jolie saying, what signings do you think still need to be made? And if, fearing the worst, we are unable to make any, how do you fancy our chances with the squad we have? Michael Dakin saying, you're only allowed to sign one more player, which position would you pick? And Josh Buck saying, after today, where do we need to strengthen? So with that in mind, then, Abags, it's a case of limited funds, as we've known all season. It's a case of the club not really selling too many players. We'll get onto the outgoings in a second, but the budget is pretty straightforward. And, you know, we've got a goalkeeper, we've got two centre-backs, we've got a centre-mid, we've got a bunch of kids to play in attack. And, you know, to fill out the squad as we need it, where would you say is that last position that we need to fill?
I'd like to say goalkeeper on the simple basis that I don't think we're particularly strong there. I think, you know, we need an experienced goalkeeper. But we're also of the opinion that that's not going to happen. So, you know, realistically, if I do answer that, then, you know, I'm going to be disappointed. So I think we need, I'd like to say, another striker. I'd be happy with one more striker, so that at least we've got three up front, you know, three top end players. And, you know, certainly looking like Baldock's going to be up that way, going to be, you know, playing first team games again next season. So with Mate and Baldock, I'd like that third one, just so that we've got that little bit of cover. And again, I'd like it to be ideally be proven. You know, even if it's a Charlie Adam type signing where it's only for a season. But we know they've got pedigree at this level. I'm not really overly fussed, so long as they can play in Gomez's system, and they have a degree of pedigree about them.
Yeah, it's interesting, the thing with strikes, isn't it? Because we've got, as I say, so many young players who can, in theory, do a job and all those kind of sayings. You know, I'll give them a run of 10 games and hopefully that'll work out. But we've not necessarily got the luxury of that. And Gomez might not want to, you know, say to someone like Novakovic that you're going to get 10 games, because it's then telling someone like Danny Loader that he's not going to get in for those 10 games. So it's hard to sort of balance it out. And for me, I think if we're going to sign one position, I'm kind of the opinion that you can't really have too many central midfielders, because if we're going to play a diamond and if we're going to, Yeah, have a player who sits. We've obviously got John Swift and Winamota, who are going to have to be massive this season. Those two players, I think, they're as important to us as the team, or as important to the team as any other players in the squad at the moment, if not the two most important players we have, because they're in essence the spine, what we're going to build around now. So in that central midfield position, I would happily sign another player in there and just get another, you know, whether it's a physical player or a technical player or what have you, like a Lewis Baker sort of type. Obviously he's not coming back, but that sort of type is where I'd go for, because if you look at the outgoings, that doesn't really offer us too many clues in terms of the players that have gone. Obviously Liam Kelly, John Daddy Bodvarsson has gone, Mark McNulty's gone on loan to Sunderland. It doesn't leave any massive gaps, because we haven't really sold that many players.
No, it's very true. And I know we still got the likes of Chris Gunter and Gareth McCleary still on the book, so you know the amount of money that you've got to play with is quite small. But no, I mean that's a very fair point that you make. So I'd still be happy with that extra striker. I mean, the thing is, when you have Danny Loader and when you have Andrea Novakovic, you have Sam Baldock, who doesn't really score a huge amount. I think he's 1 in 4, 1 in 5 throughout his career. And Yaku Meite, who's only done it for one season. I'd like that striker who we know that we can rely on, really. Because if we, you know, if we do go 4 months, 5 months of the season and suddenly, bang, you know, despite all of the great approach play that we've got, we're not scoring goals, what do you do then? It's a tough one.
It is, and interestingly, on McCleary and Gunter, both those players have been given an official squad number for next season, as has AD Popper. But the likes of David Myler, for example, haven't. And there has been a kind of conversation with this kind of transfer listed group of about seven players who were told to turn up later for pre-season, weren't taken on the Spain tour, haven't featured at all in the friendlies and whatnot. A lot of fans have felt that, particularly for players like McCleary, who are, you know, are effectively almost our longest serving players, that they're kind of, it feels a bit heartless. Where do you stand on this? Because for me, the idea that, you know, obviously we're still paying McCleary, still turning up, still give facilities to train in, we're obviously pushing for him to find a new club as hard as we can. I'm sure he could find another club if he wants to take a pay cut, but understandably he isn't. And I don't quite buy into the sense that this is a sorry state to be in. It's a sorry state that we gave him the contract in the first place that he wasn't worth. For me, that's when the club did wrong. What they're trying to do now and get rid of him, yes, it seems extreme and it can seem harsh, but obviously we don't know as fans particularly how useful or successful these sort of extreme measures are. Do you think it is a case that the club are being too ruthless and too harsh with these players by effectively outcasting them?
I think there's certainly with players that have given the club a good degree of service, like Gunter and McCleary, whether you like the players or not, you can't turn around and say that they haven't been professional throughout the whole of their careers here. And McCleary certainly was a key player. At the end of last season, he started, I think, most of the games, and he, you know, he set up some key goals. I mean, I'm thinking notably the opener at Ipswich, and Gunter, of course, you know, well, Gunter has taken absolute pelters from some of the fans for one reason and another, unfairly so in many cases, certainly very, very harshly in some cases, but he's given 100%, which is the bare minimum that you can ask for. He's given 100% in every game. So looking at it now in the cold light of day, I think it is very harsh the way the club have, like I say, effectively outcasted them. And I think there must have been a better way to go about it. Certainly a more conciliatory way to go about it, perhaps keep them involved in the squad. And take them, but knowing that they would still be able to play, I suppose. But knowing also that if the club received an offer for them, we would be we'd be looking for them to hopefully move on. I think it's, I can see exactly both sides, but yeah, I'm I'm of the opinion that we've been, particularly with McCleary and Gunter, I think we've been exceptionally harsh with them.
The thing is that those, I mean, John Dadibod Varson had a lot of market value, in my opinion, to the extent that we've got like a six-figure sum, near enough, not too far off £1 million, to let him go to a team, yes, championship rival, but personally not too fast because he's not, I don't think he's that too good a player. But McCleary, at his age and at his wage, is going to be very difficult to find a new club. Gunter, you'd have thought that there'd be a bit more chat about him leaving if someone really was that keen on him. So therefore, you get to a situation in, you know, two and a half weeks' time. Those players are still at the club. It's almost impossible to get them out. Do you bring them back then? Do you think that they'll get brought back in? Because I am of the opinion that they will get brought back in to some sort of degree, whether that's to play in the League Cup or slowly brought back into the subs and training with the first team. It will be awkward and it seems a bit of a, you know, waste of time if that happens. But practically speaking, if we're if we're in a bad run of results and we've got Gareth McCleary there and we're lacking for width or whatever, it seems almost silly that you wouldn't bring him back into the fold.
I absolutely agree. I entirely agree. Regardless of his age and regardless of his money, he's still a very effective player. And on his day, he's one of the best wingers in the division. All right, he hasn't necessarily had a huge number of opportunities to show that over the last couple of years, and he has fairly consistently played and been a part of a poor Reading side throughout most of his career here. But you know, my opinion is, I think it's absolutely scandalous. Like a player like Gareth McCleary has not played more in the Premier League than what he did. He only had one season. So, I think I'm of the opinion, yeah, he probably will be drafted back in if he doesn't leave. To at least supplement and complement the squad. Certainly if we end up with a number of injuries. And of course it'll be up to him then to play to a level that keeps him in the certainly in the squad for the rest of the season. But I think it will be a more by luck than judgment scenario, much like Sam Baldock. I think if that does happen,
reminiscent of the sort of Gareth Bale affair going on at Real Madrid at the moment. So football does have these sort of things. Obviously, we're not in the sort of world of heroes and villains quite like the Premier League is, with the hype and the drama around it. It happens on a smaller scale at Reading, but it's not beyond the realms of possibility that happens, and as fans we're just going to have to sit tight and see. And I think from Gomez's point of view at the moment, he's put a lot of faith in these young players, perhaps as a case that he's been forced to. We don't know whether he is secretly yearning to have Gareth McCleary back in, but if he's got like the likes of Barrett and Elise, he might well feel that it's harsh on those players just to bring McCleary back in because we haven't been able to sell him effectively. So that's something we're going to have to keep an eye out on. Before we kind of give our kind of predictions on where Reading are going to end up and how in particular the Sheffield Wednesday game is going to go, I want to kind of talk about the state of the league and the championship in general, just kind of place us in that, because it's been a very unique summer almost. It's almost been a summer kind of like you had back in the sort of early noughties with the championship, where the clubs that have come down have just kind of ring-fenced their main players and tried to keep hold of them rather than going spending. The clubs that are financially struggling are picking out tiny little deals here and there. The clubs that are spending money, like Brentford, are only spending money because they've sold players. It makes for a very interesting championship season, and for me, a better championship season.
Yeah, I think so. I had the other day, I was actually writing the besotted club by club prediction article. So I did it for on behalf of the Tarlist End and for Reading Football Club. And I looked down the list of clubs, and there isn't, certainly for teams that. And one of the questions that was asked was team that's nailed on for relegation, and I can't pick one out on the simple basis that the division is so strong this season that it's difficult to find one. I think you might find Charlton down there, you might find Luton down there, But then they could just as easily, go on a reasonable run of form and be, you know, sort of mid-table fodder or higher. So I think where we are, based on what I've seen, based on what I've seen so far this preseason, I think we're going to surprise a lot of teams. I don't think we're going to pressure the top six, but I don't think we're going to be anywhere near relegation. I think we'll probably be. I predicted sort of 14th-ish, something like that, in the article. I think that's roughly where we're going to be. But hopefully, on a steady upward, at the beginnings of an upwards upward spiral. A gradual rebuilding into both this summer, January hopefully, and in the next pre-season, and hopefully Gomez is still our manager then, going from there. I can't at the moment see us being anywhere near the relegation zone. I think there will be weaker teams than us, but at the same time, this time next year, who knows what's going to happen, because it's just such an unpredictable division, as ever.
That's the thing, isn't it? You come into these games, you look at the first few fixtures we've got: Sheffield Wednesday at home, Hull away, Cardiff at home, West Brom away, Huddersfield away, and Charlton at home. And you think, well, out of those home games, you look at 5, maybe 6 points. You look at the away games, you take a win and a draw out of it. But Huddersfield are a team that have probably been one of the worst Premier League teams in history the last year. They've come down with Fulham, and who have got a very inexperienced manager. Cardiff, who have basically got the same team they had before, they've got the same manager. One of the rare teams that you can actually kind of confidently say how they're going to play and how they might do. But these teams like Charlton, Sheffield Wednesday, Hull, us as well, are such unpredictable quantities. And as a team that hasn't made too many signings, and for us, we've kept our manager, unlike those two teams, you get a sense that the kind of the organisation and the basic level of the team is going to be quite high. And that's probably going to be the same for us and for a lot of teams in the Championship that haven't been able to spend money. Because when you just have basically the same team as last year, in theory, that makes me think that they're going to be a bit more organised. Their team spirit will be quite high because they all know each other a bit better. There'll probably be less, silly defending, less stupid mistakes. That these teams are just going to gently raise their level in the kind of evolution that you get. And that makes it a difficult proposition when you are hosting these teams who are, like Blackburn, for example, will know each other inside out in the same way that you hope we will. And therefore, picking up the points, it could be a very unpredictable state that maybe we win at Huddersfield and lose at Charlton. And personally, in terms of how we're going to do this season, I think for the first few months, we are going to be very inconsistent. I think with the nature of the players we've got, with their age, with the kind of style that we play as well, and how errors can pop up quite easily and cost us quite a lot, I think we're going to be finding ourselves watching a team that's brilliant one week and just doesn't kick into gear at all the next.
Yeah, and that's going to be a... it's almost a trait for every young side, and that's where we need to really be on our mettle, because and try and leech out as many consistent performances as we possibly can. Again, it's going to take patience from supporters, and time. It's the only thing that we can do.
And on the more immediate future, because Reading and kicking off on the first game of the season, then as we mentioned, Sheffield Wednesday at home. This is going to be an interesting game because basically we have very little idea kind of how Sheffield Wednesday are going to turn up. As you alluded to earlier in the show, that they don't really have a manager at the moment. The latest news is that they potentially might be going for an Argentine by the name of Nestor Lorenzo. So God knows what sort of state they'll turn up in. And obviously in the next week, Reading might make a signing or two, although I do suspect that if we make a signing in the coming days, they won't be starting against Sheffield Wednesday. It seems like Gomez is the sort of man who, unless they're an amazing player, will kind of keep a consistency to his team and go from there. So for Sheffield Wednesday, how do you expect this game to sort of go? Do you think that we are going to race out the blocks and get a couple goals, or is it going to be a bit more stodgy and a bit more of a, of a kind of moment when out of pre-season, the younger players in particular kind of get the jitters to an extent and realise that this is the real thing, and up against players in a competitive atmosphere, it's a different ball game.
Well, they had a they've had most of the youngsters have had an idea of what first team football's like, because they've all played it before, even if they, you know, not to a huge extent. I think they certainly will look to make a fast start playing the quick, incisive football that we saw certainly in the first 15 minutes today, where at times we had Chelsea all over the place. I think we'll be looking to do that. I think we'll be looking to create as many chances as you can. That's kind of the aim of football, really. I can't see us making a sort of yap stam type start where we kind of play ourselves into games. If we can, if we can make a fast start, then I think it'll bode well. I hopefully get an early goal and just settle ourselves down a little bit. I think we'll be in a good place.
Well, hopefully we can benefit from Sheffield Wednesday being the sort of team that's not in a good place. And I must admit, I'm not too in tune with how their fans and whatnot are feeling about the new season. But for a team that has relatively recently lost its manager, I remember we played Nottingham Forest about halfway through last season, straight after Aitor Karanka left, and they were basically a shambles. So if we can get Sheffield Wednesday in any kind of state like that, we will have a good chance.
Just to point out that Sheffield Wednesday have only just been released from their soft transfer embargo. So, they were in the same situation as us, but it didn't. They were in it for a little bit longer. So they'll be looking to do some of any of their business, certainly this week. So we're worth keeping an eye out for. But at the same time, as you say, they haven't got a manager. No.
Well, that means for me, that just means that it's a case of, if they are going to plug in three debutants for us against us, I think that probably bodes well, and that gives us an opportunity to, especially when you say about this fast start, that gives us the opportunity to catch them unawares and as they're still feeling the way into the season, as it were. So that I think bodes well, generally speaking, for us. And as the start of the season commences, it is the start of the return of the Talisend Prediction League. And you find yourself, Dave, will be back in it again this year, plugging away and hoping to claim Ollie's title. So I'd like your prediction for Sheffield Wednesday to kick us off then.
I'll go 3-1 win.
Okay, well, I was thinking for a long time 0-0 for this, because we drew a lot of games 0-0 last season. But from the last couple pre-season games, it looks like we're kind of kicking into a bit better of an attacking gear and maybe even worrying defensive. So I'm going to go for a 1-0 Reading win, perhaps a bit of a backs to the wall, score early, and that's that sort of game. So two wins to kick off the Prediction League this season then. And this season will begin on Saturday in earnest at home to Sheffield Wednesday. And we'll be back for episode 197 of the Talisend Podcast after that game. That should be on Monday. We record, as I say, with Ollie unable to do the weekend preview this season. Monday is pretty much going to be the consistent one-stop shop for all things Reading FC on the Talisend. So, it's a new season, and thank you very much for joining us tonight then, Dave.
No worries, absolutely fine.
And we'll be back next week to commence the Championship season of 2019-20. It's a season that we go into with a bit of apprehension, but actually quite a lot of cautious optimism, as we get to see a sort of team that Reading fans have perhaps been dying to see for a number of seasons now. A young team, a team that wants to play football in a progressive manner, a team that wants to entertain, a team that's capable of entertaining, and hopefully, as we'll see on the first game of the season, a team capable of picking up a win. Thank you very much for listening, and come on, you arse.
smile. Funny how the crowns always be betrayed, even when it seems all your tale. Funny how I always be betrayed. You smile, why? Why do you sit on this side of the tree? Please tell me why. Why don't you break this old biscuit? Just starting to see, kissing out the cup of